Live from London with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
And welcome back. That was interesting talking to Philip Dwyer. As I said to him, I barely agree with the word that he says, but I think it's really important to hear him. That's the thing. I think pushing people underground for views that we may find unsavory in polite society is never a solution. And I think that we need to talk, we need to discuss, we need to have adult conversations about it, whatever it is, frankly. And I just want to say that I am really grateful that he was actually prepared to have that conversation. Sometimes people are really like, they'll say one thing and then when you put them in front of a camera, they say another. But he was very forthright. He stuck by what he believed in. And I can respect that. I don't have to respect what he's saying. I don't have to agree with what he's saying. But I can respect the fact that he rocked up here and he stated his case. And as indeed, I welcome anybody doing it. Now, this is a story that we will keep coming back to because it's still not making any sense to me, right? Last week, we talked about this MP story where there was this sort of phishing that was going on. This, they called it spear phishing, I believe, on WhatsApp, where somebody had contacted a number of political journalists, a number of politicians, a number of workers in Parliament. And a couple of people had responded and sent back quite erotic pictures. And one of the people who had responded was MP William Ragg. He's a Tory MP. And now apparently he's voluntarily given up his Tory whip after admitting giving out the phone numbers of his colleagues in this so-called honey trapping scandal that is all around Westminster at the moment. And it's very interesting because what we actually discovered yesterday evening was that the scammers actually used photographs which showed two students in their late teens. And they were decades old images, apparently, of a financial analyst and lawyer who have no involvement with politics whatsoever. So there were a series of pictures of students and this. And a viewer actually contacted me about William Ragg because she found it very interesting that his was the name that was being highlighted. And I think I'd already said this last week. William Ragg was one of the people behind sort of displacing Boris Johnson from the role of prime minister and clearly a thorn in the side of government to a certain degree. And Sue said, and I'm going to quote her directly, "I remember William Ragg as an OK MP. He's upset his fair share of establishment MPs and lords by speaking out. Plus, he's a friend of Sir Christopher Chope and has supported bills on human trafficking and payments for vaccine injured." Well, that immediately made me go, oh, OK. Has he upset somebody, especially about the vaccine injured? And Sue goes on to say, in a recent Exit interview only 3 weeks ago, he admits to being a troublemaker and took a fairly relaxed stance on the enemies he's made, saying it's part of the job. But he's thinking again now. He compared government whips to the mafia and called Boris Johnson Faust. How apt is that? He knows what's going on, in my opinion, and has played the game as best he could. But just as he's getting out, it's all backfired on him and those he's upset want revenge. And I think that's a really interesting take on it because we know that once you've upset somebody in Parliament and once they want you out, that's when things will get leaked. And I said, when I first spotted this story, something just doesn't add up. Gemma Cooper, a renowned journalist, added that the same thing as well. She backed that up. She felt it didn't add up. Then Nick Margerison, broadcaster and journalist who was on the show on Monday, also said there's something wrong with this story. I mean, it's because we have an instinct. We know when something is not being conveyed to us in an accurate way, that something is there to perhaps cover up something deeper. So is it possible this was all about getting rid of William Ragg? Who knows? That might be part of it. Because oftentimes with these things, of course, it's not just one agenda. It can fulfill several agendas. And that might be what's going on here. And Sue ends with saying, "I may have this completely wrong. Just know what he did before." And I think it's worth highlighting, Sue. I really do, because as you know, as we have said repeatedly and historically, it's known that nothing happens by accident in politics, and certainly not the leaking of this type of information when there is much more damning information that is being kept hidden. And we know that from what Tim Fortescue had previously said in a documentary that Nick Margerison mentioned on Monday. Tim Fortescue talked about his work within the government cabinet office, within Parliament, and how it was his job to basically sort out MPs who would come to him with a problem. And often he said that involved young boys. So make that what you will. What is coming out? I don't for a second think that we've seen the end of this honey trapping story, not for a second, but this perhaps is just another element to it. And on that note, let's find out what Gemma Cooper has to say in this second hour.
Your voice heard here.
The government needs to step up and do its job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here she is, the remarkable Gemma Cooper. Gemma, we knew something was wrong with this story, and little bit by bit, something else keeps coming out, right?
Exactly. And Sue's not got it wrong at all. And I think that's the beauty of it, that everyone who's tuning in, where however people are engaging with TNT on the many different platforms, is, you know, our audience is the most switched on audience in the world when it comes to journalism, stories, when it comes to that sixth sense, that little intuition that's like what the globalists and what the those in control of us are telling us and the reality of the situation poles apart. And that's what the last 4 years has taught us. And people have had their intuition switched on in the last 4 years with regard to what those in power tell us. And what the truth is. And this is that story completely. Troublemaking MP, can't just get rid of him in the way that you would like to, a la Andrew Bridgen, possibly, who's still not going anywhere, despite your opinions of Andrew Bridgen, who's also a controversial figure. But let's do a honey trap. The oldest one in the book. That is the oldest one in the book, a honey trap scandal, and it to silence somebody who is proud of a troublemaking record. Let me assure you, William Ragg, unless you're born into the highest echelons of British society, we are talking aristocratic blood, royal family blood, blue blood, different from the rest of us, then you can't challenge the system. You can, but be prepared for the consequences. Even JFK didn't get away with it, did he? You know, it's a brave thing to do, but it's quite a naive thing to do. So, I mean, he's lost the whip, hasn't he? Which means he's lost the kind of voting power, but he hasn't lost his seat as far as I'm aware. He's not completely out. He's become a backbencher. Is that right?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And by the way, that comment you just made about JFK, my brother, I just have to quote my brother. My brother has often said to me in regard to my work, and that is, you can kill a person, but you can't kill what they stand for. And I love that. I love that idea. And that's what makes us powerful, right? Is that our message lives way beyond us. And that is important. So tell us about the headlines, Gemma.
Well, the biggest headline in the UK today is the story we discussed at length at the top of the last hour, and that's the CAS report into NHS treatment of children who think they want to change their gender. We discussed that at length at the top of the last hour. That report is damning, 32 recommendations, 388 pages, 4 years in the making. Let's see what the NHS actually do with the findings. The second headline, it's the Post Office inquiry. Really headlines from yesterday, but worth referring to again this morning as the inquiry rumbles on. Alan Bates, the man who led the litigation in the Post Office Horizon IT scandal, said that basically post office bosses at the time when this was going on and people were losing their livelihoods, their jobs and their lives, said that the post office bosses were nothing more than thugs in suits. He gave some very damning evidence yesterday, which I talked about on other TNT shows. I mean, he really is an absolutely steadfast human being, absolutely brilliant guy. Also, a drug from America is absolutely arrived onto UK shores. Xylazine, otherwise known as Trank or the zombie drug, has hit the UK. It's already been dubbed an emerging threat in the US, and experts say public health dangers have spread to Britain. It's in vapes, it's in all kinds of drugs. But this one, the final headline, which I've picked up since we last spoke, the UK COVID inquiry, that toothless whitewash of an inquiry, has been criticised by 30 mental health organisations who are criticising Baroness Hallett, saying that she agreed to look at the mental health consequences of lockdown at the next phase in the autumn. She's now done a U-turn on that and says she won't be looking at her mental health. They say she's letting millions of people down. The inquiry's focus is devastatingly narrow. We've been talking about that here on TNT for months now, and they're calling on her to reverse her decision and actually properly forensically look in the next module at the effect that lockdown's had on the mental health of millions and millions and millions of people here in the UK.
That is a huge story. We have to go into that more, Gemma.
Absolutely. Well, it's an open letter that's been published today by 30 mental health organisations, including MIND, the Centre for Mental Health, the Association of Mental Health Providers, dozens and dozens on there. Basically, Lady Hallett, Baroness Hallett, who's the chair of the inquiry, she originally said in Module 3, which begins in September 2024, that she would look at the impact of lockdowns on adult mental health across the UK. She's since now suddenly ruled it out. Now, another phase of the COVID inquiry has also been postponed, and that's the impact of vaccines, the vaccine rollout, looking at vaccine harms. That was due to take place in summer of 2024. That has also been postponed. Originally, the excuse was till after the general election because everybody's going to be too busy. It's more that the damning evidence that would come out in the vaccine section. So not only are they postponing the vaccine section, which was supposed to take place in the summer, they're now postponing the impact of lockdowns on mental health. She said that there's not enough time to go into the impact of mental health, lockdowns on mental health, and it's not coming under the remit of the inquiry, and it'll be looked at another time. Well, we all know what that means. It won't be looked at all. Now, 30 mental health organisations have written to her in this open letter saying that there are so many studies now that show that mental health plummeted in the UK, March 2020 onwards. One in five adults had severe mental health problems, some suicidal ideation as a result of lockdowns, but they didn't seek help because they didn't think their problems were serious enough because they are constantly being bombarded with the message that, you know, other people are more important, stay at home, protect the NHS, and save lives. Also, a study by Bangor University in the north of Ireland said, and this is so interesting, and I think we all know this, that mental health was worse and still is worse on those who followed the COVID restrictions most closely. So if you did what you were told by the government and isolate yourself and not speak to anybody and act like there was an absolutely deadly rebranded flu virus, you're still the person most likely to be now, even now in 2024, suffering with stress, anxiety and depression. Also, the effects on children, which we talked about at the top of the last hour with relation to the CAS report, the rise in disability, both mental and physical, mostly mental though in children, has risen since March 2020 in the under 16s by 60%. Now, we also talked at the top of the last hour about the link of mental health in children and their willingness to look at changing gender. You can't deny that the two are absolutely linked because the amount of children wanting to be referred for gender questioning, if you want to call it that, since 2020 went from the dozens pre-2020 to thousands 2020 onwards. And now we've got these mental health charities saying that the effect on mental health for children has risen by 60%. You can't ignore the link. Whether or not Baroness Hallett responds to this, she has kind of ostensibly responded and said, you know, sorry, I'm ditching that section of the inquiry. Not enough time. Every single charity that's written to her and signed this letter says there is absolutely time and it is the thing that needs to be looked at. But this COVID inquiry, we've talked about it so many times. All it wants to say is we didn't lock down enough. We didn't lock down hard enough. That's what it wants to say. More and more people across the UK, including big organisations now, big charities with a lot of clout and a lot of power, are disagreeing. Let's see if that's enough to shift the debate and make this inquiry do its job, which we're paying for. It's already cost the taxpayer millions of pounds.
That is a big story that we're going to see that splashed everywhere today. Absolutely massive story. But and I have questions, and that is, where were these mental health charities and organisations during C19? They were totally remiss, weren't they? And it's like, you know, OK, better late than never. And yes, they absolutely should be writing in. But they failed. They failed just as journalism failed during C19. And we know it. We, you know, anybody who is even mildly aware of what was taking place knows that. But also, one of our guests yesterday, don't know if you managed to see him, Gemma, was Dr. Gary Sidley. And Dr. Gary Sidley was standing up and being counted throughout COVID. And he is a former NHS clinical psychologist. And he was on the show and he has recently just published some research and also done a presentation. And it's about the psychological attack on us, the psychological attack that was used against us, the manipulation of SAGE and the SPBI team and Delve, another group who are involved in it, and their switch. So it is absolutely scandalous that Baroness Hallett has made this decision. And unfortunately, this literally confirms what we already believe about this COVID inquiry. And I think really, honestly, Gemma, it is exactly that, to say we didn't lock down soon enough, that, you know, everybody did the very best that they could in government and in positions of power. And, you know, the Jenny Harries and the Chris Whitties and the Jonathan Van Tams and all of that. And I'm actually gobsmacked. That's the first time I've heard that story this morning. So I'm just sort of processing it, but I'm actually shocked by it, Gemma. To me, this is beyond negligent not to include how it has impacted everybody's mental health.
Well, I think it's very interesting. I think she's clearly, you know, we talk about the wheels of power destroying William Ragg's career because he's speaking out. I think she's obviously being lent on, you know, the vaccine section of the COVID inquiry postponed, looking at the impact of mental health, which was supposed to happen a couple of months later, now not going to happen. I don't think she's making these decisions in isolation. She was obviously appointed as a yes person to do the government's bidding, to do the globalist bidding, to get the findings of this inquiry will be exactly what they want them to be. Even when certain experts were sitting there in the inquiry last year saying, you know, we have to consider the possibility that this was a bioweapon. And the chair of the inquiry and the lawyers slapped them down and said, no, we're not going to discuss that here. Well, that's exactly what we should be discussing at the inquiry, every aspect of what happened. And it seems to be no. And what the charities have said this morning is it's an exceptionally narrow focus of inquiry, which means it's not an inquiry. That's not that an inquiry is supposed to be wide ranging. I think she's not deciding this. She doesn't wake up one morning and think, oh, I'm just going to change the COVID inquiry today. There'll be an army of government think tank advisors, shadowy government departments that we don't even know about with this and coming from even probably higher than the UK government itself, because, you know, the findings of one inquiry, and we're lucky enough to have an inquiry, so many countries aren't, that this will ripple around the world. So they don't want to look at any of the really salient points, vaccine rollout, vaccine harms, vaccine coercion, and the impact on mental health and the legacy we're still living with. When you relate mental health in children to the CAS report, which is what we were talking about at the top of the last hour, and the thousands of children March 2020 onwards that are so traumatized, they think that changing gender is going to be the answer. It's not. Standing up to the system is the answer. Taking sovereignty is the answer. Luckily, more and more of us are doing it. I don't know what kickback we have against Baroness Hallett, and I don't know how many, you know, open letters need to be written by mental health organizations. Let's see if it has any impact at all. It might just be one of those stories that comes and goes. I hope not.
What a powerful morning for news, Gemma. Thank you for bringing it to us so brilliantly and so succinctly and so articulately. We really appreciate it. We'll be right back.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Mrs. Pirate in the comments agrees with me. Exactly where were they? Where was cancer research when 1 million women missed their mammograms? All the women who couldn't access smear tests? Where were the teachers, the unions, etc., standing up for children? The same people who fine parents for taking their children out of school now. And Chris says, have we seen the numbers of suicides during that time? The numbers of mental health problems, child abuse by parents, domestic abuse, etc. Mogden says she may have woken up one morning and found a horse's head in her bed, though. And that sounds like a joke, right? But we know how these things work. Now, let us change it all completely, because that's what this show is all about. I'm absolutely delighted to be welcoming Alex Craner to the show. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Good morning, Sonia. Very happy to be with you. I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm looking at your CV, Alex. This is a very interesting, rich and curious CV, and we're going to drill down on it because I think it will inform a great deal of our conversation. You are a market analyst, you're a researcher, you're a trader, you're a hedge fund manager. We've been taught to hate you people. You do know that, right? And you are the creator of iSystem Trend and so many other things. And you also have a very interesting history where you were born, your understanding. So let us start to drill down on this, right? I would like to talk to you about Ukraine, about manufactured wars, about some of your warnings from years ago. I've been watching some of your old videos, and one of the things that you said, and it just, you know, when you're just like listening and you're just sort of half listening, and then somebody says something and you go, oh. And one of the things that you said was that we have to be prepared for an imminent energy crisis over the next 10 to 20 years. Are we all already seeing the rules being put in place to enable that?
Well, yes, you know, this whole energy transition from the quote unquote fossil fuels to quote unquote sustainable energy sources has been this preparation. And the preparation has gone on quite extensively, even from the aspect of European nations canceling their stable price long-term supply contracts, primarily with Russia, to floating price, market-based, as though this is some kind of a great advance. But as we've seen with the beginning of the special military operation in Ukraine, those markets have been anything but stable. So it creates a source of instability, it creates a source of potential shortages. You know, for businesses it's extremely difficult because they cannot plan their production and their pricing because they don't know what energy price they're going to be paying. So this is a self-inflicted energy crisis in the making. And obviously, the ruling establishments in the West have not given up on their great reset.
Indeed, they haven't. Now, we are being repeatedly told that our energy crisis, an energy crisis, which turns out that British Gas can make multi-millions in profit. Well, we're all experiencing this energy crisis. And that's just one example of a provider. But we're told that is as a consequence of the war between Russia and Ukraine. But it's not, is it?
No, it's not, because Russia never intended to stop the supply of energy to European markets. It's the West that has forced this interruption, you know, even to the point of blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines. And then, as you know, as destiny would have it, one of the four tubes bringing natural gas to Germany has remained intact. And the Russians have said, it's up to you. If you want, we can switch it back on and you can have a supply of natural gas, you know, cheap, reliable, abundant. But it's the West that doesn't want to reopen this energy supply. So it's obviously self-inflicted. And we've seen that the price hikes have corresponded with the increase in profits for the energy suppliers in Europe. So it's a myth that it has a lot to do with the war in Ukraine. It's largely self-inflicted, and it has its beneficiaries, and it's not the Russians, it's not the Ukrainians, it's the Western corporations.
I mean, I love the fact that you are so boldly prepared to state completely opposite to what so many commentators are. And I think that's so important, because what we actually have is, we obviously, many of our commentators, certainly on legacy media, are entirely captured by this, you know, America's proxy war. Do you see that as America's proxy war, what's taking place in Ukraine?
Well, yes, but I would, you know, I would qualify America's, because it's not the United States, the Republic, and its legitimate democratic institutions representing the people of the United States. This is obviously a very, very narrow nexus of vested interests who are bent on defending their hegemony over the Eurasian landmass. This is the key to the current conflict. And then I would also always remind your viewers and listeners that The nature of the conflict has been best formulated by George Soros, who said that it's a conflict between two systems of governance. And this is absolutely true, except that George Soros then goes on to mischaracterize them, calling one system of governance as the open societies, which would be the Western liberal democracies where human rights are sacrosanct and everything is wonderful, opposed to tyrannies and autocracies around the world, which are dark and evil, and we have to, you know, defeat them. That is a kind of an inversion, but what we have in actuality is this conflict between two systems of governance, where one is the old oligarchic, neocolonial, imperialistic powers in the West versus pretty much the whole rest of the humanity, including the domestic populations of these oligarchic regimes.
Let us hold you right there for a second. We're going to go to some news headlines and we will be right back.
Now's a good time to break the big news.
TNT Radio News.
This is Jason Olborn with your news headlines. A CIA and former FBI official has admitted in an undercover recording that the FBI can jail anyone by setting them up going after media personality Alex Jones and intimating the Capitol Police remained uninformed on January 6th. The US CDC has been ordered to release 780,000 reports of vaccine injury previously hidden from the public, despite assuring the public of vaccine safety.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
I'm here talking to Alex Craner. He is the author of a number of banned books, actually, including Mastering Uncertainty and Grand Deception, which was actually banned. And Alex is giving us a brilliant insight into the issues between Russia and Ukraine. But also, I was saying about your history, Alex, and how interesting it is. You were born in former Yugoslavia. You served in the Croatian army. So you do have an understanding about war, right?
Yes, I do to a good extent.
And you also understand how consent is manufactured for war and how the West benefit from war. I mean, one of the talks I was listening to that you were involved in, you were talking about the how America has dominated war, how 80% of wars have been as a consequence of American action, right?
Yes, correct. That's an empirical fact. It was published in a peer-reviewed journal where they tallied up all the wars around the world that have happened between 1946 and 2002. And they found that the United States actually initiated more than 80% of all those conflicts. And since then, we had more, including Iraq and Yemen and Syria and Libya and so forth. So it's, you know, it's a disturbing fact that has to be explained somehow. And it's not because the American people are particularly warlike. They consistently vote for anti-war candidates when given a choice, and they consistently get more war from their political establishment. So there has to be an explanation somewhere. And this explanation, unfortunately, is never given. It's not really discussed, but it exists, and we have to know.
We certainly do have to know. So what's your take on it? So are we just dealing with bloodthirsty people who realize that there are rich resources all over the world that they want to plunder, or is there something else going on?
Well, yes, primarily it's about plunder, and it's not about freedom and democracy and slaying all these evil autocrats and various dragons around the world. The way I worked it out, it's always about the control of collateral because, you know, Western powers are always going around the world trying to secure access to resources. But the problem with that is that you can have access to those resources through trade. So as far as you and I are concerned, when you go to the gas pump, and we fill our tank with petrol, we still have to pay. It's not like it's free if it's BP who procures the petrol versus it's payable if it's Gazprom. We have to pay regardless. And, you know, BP could have a wonderful, profitable business by buying the petrol from Russia, from Gazprom, or from, you know, Rosneft, or whoever, adding their margin and making a nice profit. The only group in society for whom the access to these resources makes all the difference are the banking institutions, because those resources constitute collateral. And if they have control of that collateral, then they can issue loans to their friendly corporations, who then go into countries around the world and develop those resources and extract them and turn them into financial flows on those banks' books. Well, if you know, if Gazprom develops Russian gas, Western banks get no benefit from that. But if, say, BP or Shell can do the same, then it's the Western banks who can issue loans to BP and Shell, and then those loans have to be repaid with interest. And so, you know, loans are assets on the bankers' ledgers. And so it's only the bankers for whom it's difference between night and day who controls the collateral. And so it's always the bankers who are creating incentives for war and conquest and colonizations and the spread of empires. It's always the same thing, and it's been the same thing for literally many, many centuries. And in the process, we managed to destroy six indigenous major civilizations around the world and depopulated massive swathes of the earth.
Shocking stuff. You've written this piece, very in-depth piece about Ukraine war, about Western systems, on your Substack, on alexcraner.substack.com. Really interesting, because what you're actually saying is, despite the support that Ukraine has been given, and it has been in some respects unprecedented, I mean, it is just shocking when you see a president who appears, you know, in parliament all over the world and award ceremonies, and Hollywood stars travel to see him, and billions of pounds of British taxpayers' money and from all over the world is being sent to the Ukraine. But what you're actually saying is that Russia appears to be winning the conflict. Talk to us about this.
Well, Russia has had what Obama termed escalatory dominance in the region. So it was never a question whether Russia would prevail or not. I think that the bet on the part of Western political establishment was that by initiating the war, or better said, provoking the Russians into initiating the war, they would hit them with such nuclear sanctions that it would collapse Russian economy, and that they would be unable to maintain the conflict, that it would turn into a quagmire like Afghanistan was in the 80s. For the Soviet Union, and that this would then in turn lead to a regime change, and that perhaps the West would be able to install some kind of Boris Yeltsin or Juan Guaido or, you know, Zelensky in Kremlin and take over Russia in this way and turn it back into what Russia was in the 1990s, an obedient vassal of the Western financial powers. Mm-hmm. So that was the bet, and the bet didn't work out. And so what's left is a military conflict where I think there never was a question who would prevail.
Right. I'm just looking at some of the comments here. Really interesting stuff. So the thing is, Alex, are we going to see an end to this? When is there going to be an end to this conflict?
I think it will take decades, but the conflict really will not necessarily continue by military means. I think that, Russia will eventually prevail in Ukraine. The terms of the peace will be dictated by Russia. And then the conflict continues because, you know, Russia has been almost continually the target of different military and regime change campaigns from the West for centuries, literally from the 1600s. Napoleon's invasion and Hitler's invasion were merely the most spectacular versions of this, but it's been nonstop. It's been constant. Even the Bolshevik coup was a form of early color revolution inflicted on Russia. So I think that the Russians and the Chinese understand today that this system of governance, you know, going back to the origin of the conflict, has to be stomped out. It has to be shoved into the dustbin of history. And the way to do this will not be by military means, because you can't, you know, bomb the banks out of existence. It'll have to be done through legal means. And so that means that Russians and the Chinese will probably have to push for the overturn of the Magnitsky legislation in the West. So we have to explain this, since it's not a household term, but Magnitsky legislation started with the Magnitsky Act in the United States, which was passed in December of 2012. And this was deemed as an opening salvo in the new Cold War. And Magnitsky legislation essentially creates a large barrier between the Western and the Russian legal systems. And that means that for all the, you know, plunder of Russian assets that occurred in during the 1990s, Russians have been deprived of the means to pursue that illegal acquisition of Russian assets. The Magnitsky legislation was lobbied through the U.S. Congress by a man named Bill Browder, who is originally American but became a British subject, and is very probably either a CIA or an MI6 asset. And after passing in the United States, it has been passed in 30 other Western jurisdictions. What that means effectively is that all these jurisdictions, like the United States, Canada, Cyprus, United Kingdom, Switzerland, and all the offshore jurisdictions through which these plundered Russian assets were taken by beneficiaries in the West, which are mainly high-level financial interests, cannot be pursued by Russian legal teams, but they're investigated. There are literally hundreds of investigative files that are held by Russian investigators and their law enforcement that are ready to be brought to Western jurisdictions, but they can't at the moment. So as I see it, the Russians and the Chinese are going to pursue this legally by first persuading Western leadership and Western jurisdictions to overturn this Magnitsky legislation. And then we're probably going to see years and decades of legal pursuit where this financial oligarchy in the West is going to be slowly whittled away.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's such an important insight that you've brought to the show this morning, everybody. This is Alex Craner. He does a number of things, including have a very rich history, understanding how war works. But you also analyse the energy crisis or rather the often manufactured energy crisis. Thank you so much for your insight this morning, Alex. We will be right back.
Great pleasure to be with you, Sonia.
And when the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. But the danger to animals the world over is growing, and the need for your help has never been more urgent. On land, you'll help stop poachers from threatening and killing elephants and big cats for the illegal wildlife trade. In the oceans, you'll help rescue dolphins, whales, and seals from deadly hazards. And you'll help rescue, rehabilitate, and release vulnerable animals when disasters strike. Here at home and around the world, we can't do this work without you. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
One in four Australian women experience domestic violence in their lifetime. Staying is dangerous, but leaving can mean homelessness for them and their children. With your generosity, the Salvos can provide crisis services and ongoing support, helping women find a way out of violence and a way back into a safe and stable life. Help us leave no one in need. Please donate to the Red Shield Appeal today.
You're listening to Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk, TNT.
What a phenomenal insight. One of the things that I love about doing this show is you get to talk to some incredible people. My mind gets expanded on the daily. And my next guest is absolutely no exception to that. This is somebody that I've learned a great deal from. Her name is Jackie Devoy. She's a journalist and a right proper kick-ass one at that, a broadcaster. You're a documentary maker. You're many things, Jackie. But most importantly, you're right here on TNT today. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And thanks very much for having me on the show again.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. You haven't actually been on this show with me, but you have been on TNT. We've obviously done previous shows together. But Jackie, what we're actually seeing in very real time is your work being mainstreamed, right? That is the reality. That is what's happening. And your work, you were literally the first person who was talking about midazolam, the use of the mass use of midazolam during C19. I don't recall anybody else talking about it before you. And you were absolutely aware that we were ordering excessive amounts, that there were excessive deaths. Talk to us about that research.
Well, I most definitely wasn't the first and only person. I think it all began with one man who came to me and a couple of other people, other journalists, lawyers and other people, telling the story of how his loved one had been murdered in an NHS facility. And he's always wanted to remain anonymous because he has gone legal and he's been working on getting some kind of justice for his loved one over the last 4 years. So can't say too much about that. But if he does succeed, it may possibly open the floodgates, may set a precedent, which is a bit of a worry in a way, because they don't want the floodgates open. They don't want lots of people to be succeeding with these cases, because in a lot of these cases, we're looking at murder or at the very least corporate manslaughter. So, if he does succeed, and if a few of the other people that I know have gone legal succeed, it's going to be a nightmare for not just the NHS, but the government.
I saw a headline, I think it was at the weekend, it was in the Daily Mail, and it was based on the information that was coming out of the Scottish COVID inquiry. And we had Dr. Claire Craig talking about it on Monday. But it also, this headline reminded me of you. And that was, were COVID patients left to die against their wishes? It was about the do not resuscitate forms and notices. And this is something that you've worked on. Certainly, you've now made two documentaries, right? You've got Playing God, which is it the premiere next week of Playing God?
Yes, on the 22nd, it's going to be premiered online on Children's Health Defence in America and on UK Column here. So we're trying to coordinate it. So it's roughly the same time, but you can see it on both platforms from that point onwards. It will be there available for everyone to see. And obviously I'll be sharing it all over the place. And So I've made the two documentaries. The first one was A Good Death with Iconic Media. And that one was an investigation into euthanasia that was being implemented in hospitals, care homes and hospices and other NHS settings back in 2020, in the first half of 2021, when it was at its most extreme. I set up a group at that time, like a little support group, to get all my case studies in one place. I had about 16 people in that group to start with in 2021. I've now got 142 people. Every single one of them have lost a loved one in a very similar way. They believe they were murdered in an NHS setting. And each story is more horrific than the last, honestly. Yeah, and you mentioned that article in the Daily Mail. I saw that last week as well. I commented on it on Twitter. It's kind of annoying and really frustrating. And you must feel the same, I'm sure, journalists. It's like I sent the Telegraph a pitch about the DNRs, an interview that I'd done with a whistleblower doctor about the DNRs back in May 2020. And the guy at the Telegraph, who was the features editor at the time, said, yeah, that's great. And he commissioned it. So I wrote it. A few weeks went by and I said, what are you doing with that article? And he said, oh, it was great, but we can't, we're not going to run it. But he wouldn't say why. They never do. And I kind of guessed by that point. So I thought, well, I need to get it out there. So I gave it to an alternative news website, and a lot of people saw that one. You can find that online. I post it regularly on it. But it is frustrating to see an article and just think, I wrote a similar article, a very similar article, 4 years ago. Why are they so slow? Why are they so slow catching? Why are they so far behind? It's obviously deliberate. It's not accident.
Right, exactly. And one of the themes of both the movies, although I haven't seen Playing God, but I've seen some of it, and I've obviously seen some of the people that you're interviewing, and I've interviewed some of those people. But one of the themes is that these deaths are not normal passings. And that is something that we cannot stress enough, right? These deaths were aided, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And as you know, in the UK, it's actually illegal to hasten another person's death. That is actually murder. If you look it up, it says voluntary and involuntary euthanasia are illegal in the UK. Involuntary euthanasia, I don't even know why that phrase exists, because involuntary euthanasia is murder, as far as I can see. Playing God, whilst A Good Death looked at euthanasia specifically, Playing God is actually a broader look at medical democide in the UK over the last 50 years. And obviously, I'm interviewing a lot of people who have lost loved ones in different circumstances, that they died because of various government policies. One of the main people in the film is a lady you've interviewed, Joan Bai, who you know very well. She's 90 years old now, and she's been fighting for justice for her daughter, Eleanor, who was killed in a drug trial back in 1978. So we go that far back. Epilim, that's right. And she's been fighting for justice ever since 1978, so almost 50 years, which is shocking. She's dedicated her whole life to it, and so did her husband until he sadly passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, bless them. Together, they work very, very hard. In fact, on Eleanor's gravestone, it actually says murdered by the state. Absolutely powerful. You've also interviewed Graham and Anne Dixon, another similarly tragic story. Vicky Spitt, who talks about her fiance dying from the AZ jab. And it is all across the board. But ultimately, the theme absolutely is about unnecessary death. And it's so important. You have like Dr. Kevin Corbett in Playing God, for example. And you really, he and you talk about an NHS killing machine. That sounds very traumatic, but sadly, it's true, isn't it?
I mean, that's pretty much the opening line of the documentary. Dr. Kevin says that. He stands by that, because what we're seeing now is, it's like a killing machine. You know, people go in, they walk in and come out in a box. You know, it's like, it's shocking what's going on. And especially back in 2020 and 2021 with the implementation of the NG163 policy, which was brought in as a COVID protocol to treat anyone presenting with respiratory systems with this protocol, which was actually identical to the banned Liverpool care pathway, which was abolished back in 2014. So it's pretty shocking that this was stealthily brought back in. When it was brought in, Matt Hancock actually spoke to a panel of doctors and professors to check whether it was okay to put this policy into action. They all said, no, it's absolutely not okay. They wrote a letter to the BMJ saying that it's not okay. This NG163 is not okay. It's going to kill people, is what they said. That's still available online if you want to look at it at BMJ. It's signed by Dr. Sam Ahmadzi and other doctors and professors. Hancock said, thanks very much for your opinions, and implemented it anyway. And this is the policy that killed people. It was later changed to NG191, a few tweaks, but it's basically the same policy. And that was what was used in the first couple of years of COVID to actually push up the COVID numbers, because a lot of these people that were euthanized were, their deaths were attributed to COVID, you know. So that huge spike in death correlates with the orders of the extra orders of midazolam and the deaths in care homes and hospitals, mainly where people were being euthanized.
I think it's really important for us to talk about those extra orders of midazolam, because in May 2020, 2 years' supply of midazolam ordered by the UK government ran out quickly, required further stocking. This is shocking. And they were using midazolam and morphine, weren't they, as a sort of cocktail. What is it commonly used for?
Well, midazolam is commonly used, it has its uses. It's a good drug in some ways. It's used for minor surgeries. It's used for dental surgery as well. And it's also used for severe epilepsy. So in those cases, in small doses, you know, you give it to a person. If a person's not had the drug before, if they're naive to it, they give it by using titration. So you start with a tiny dose, you know, like when you go to the dentist and they're numbing your gums, tiny little dose. If that doesn't work, a little bit more, a little bit more. But this NG163 policy said no titration. You just give them a first dose of 2.5 milligrams, see how it goes. That's enough to kill an elderly, frail person. And it was a lot of elderly people that were being killed. Having said that, in my group, there are a large number of people whose loved ones were under 60. So it's not all about elderly people. One thing they have in common is none of them were terminally ill, because when you tell this story to people, they say, oh, well, you know, if someone is like really old and really ill and they're dying and in terrible pain, it makes sense to do that. Even if it does make sense to do that, even if you think morally and ethically that is the right thing to do, which a lot of people do believe, it's illegal. So it shouldn't be happening at all. And like I said, most of these people, practically all of these people that I've spoken to, their loved ones didn't have a terminal illness. They might have gone into hospital with a chest infection or something like that. They weren't elderly, a lot of them. The youngest victim is 17. His grandmother is in my group. And then we've got people, young people of 21, 28, who were killed. And also a lot of people under 60, like I said, people in their 50s and early 60s. So they're not all elderly, and they're not definitely not at end of life. So why they were put on end of life pathway makes no sense whatsoever, apart from to boost the numbers and to make it look like there were more COVID deaths to scare the pants off people. You know, we remember what Matt Cook said. And then recently he said in the COVID inquiry, which has now come to a halt, I can't remember why, but he actually said he wanted to be the person who chose who should live and who should die. That is playing God. That is God.
Yeah, that's God complex, absolutely. So playing God, you've worked on it with Trailblazer Films, which is obviously Naeem and Ash Mahmood. I think both have been on TNT. Great blokes, you know, standing up, being counted, co-produced by Phil Graham. And the aim, of course, was to give a voice to the voiceless. And what we've heard this morning, quite shocking breaking news, is that all of these mental health charities who were completely remiss during COVID have now written to the COVID inquiry because Baroness Hallett has decided that we're not going to be covering the issues of mental health in the COVID inquiry. What is your take on the COVID inquiry, Jackie? It's not about getting to the truth, is it?
No, as a lot of people say, it's a whitewash. I think the conclusions of it are probably going to be, we didn't lock down hard enough, you know, and next time we need to do it sooner and harder. So I think that's going to be the conclusion. But what's interesting is that the Scottish COVID inquiry is delving into all this stuff. They are looking at these the euthanasia. Right. These, you know, these sinister deaths that happened during the pandemic. So I don't understand why Scotland are delving into it, but we're not doing that here. In fact, the whole inquiry seems to have been shut down.
It's really curious. Hope says, my mum was terrified in the hospital. I had to fight to get her out. Thank God you did, Hope, because unfortunately, Jackie and I have had to deal with so many heartbroken, grieving people who were completely unable. People just felt so helpless, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's the awful thing. I mean, there were people that I've interviewed who knew what was going on, and they did their best to stay with their relative in the hospital or their friend or in the care home. But, you know, as you remember, with care homes, people were actually physically locked out, so you couldn't actually be with them. And what I've noticed in a lot of the stories is that you can stay with them, you know, 24 hours a day almost, but as soon as you turn your back to go to the toilet or to go home and have a shower, that's when they do it. I mean, I've got one story, one lady, she went to visit her mother in a care home in January 2021, and she'd spoken to her mum on the phone just a little bit before she left the house. She got there, they said, oh, can you just wait there for a minute? We'll just go and get your mum ready. They went into the room, they killed her mum, they came out and said, you can come and see her now, but she's dead. And she's like, well, I just spoke to her on the phone half an hour ago. And they said, well, sorry, she's just died. And they're, you know, one of the recurring complaints, I suppose, that I hear is that these people who carry out these executions, there's no other word for it, they're cold, they're callous, they're sadistic, they won't look you in the eye. This lady I'm just telling you about, she then went in to see her mother, who was dead in the bed, and there was a young carer standing next to the bed, sobbing because she'd witnessed this dreadful execution. It's not a nice thing to watch, watching someone being drugged to death in a very sudden way like that. They're given a massive sudden dose. It's a horrible thing to witness. And this poor girl was traumatized. But I did have a theory, and I don't know how true this is, because, you know, most doctors and nurses are great. They wouldn't hurt people. You know, their oath is to do no harm. But there seems to be another set of people, and I wonder if they've been shipped in from somewhere. They're like,
interesting. We have to stop there, unfortunately. But everybody, this, of course, is Jackie Devoy. Please look out for Playing God. It is an absolute must watch, no doubt about it. Your work is phenomenal, Jackie. I have nothing but respect for what you've been prepared to do, certainly over the last 4 years, but many years before that. Jackie was always somebody who was prepared to speak truth to power, as indeed am I. So thank you all for everybody joining us this morning. What a powerful show. Such great guests. Jackie Devoy, of course, Philip Dwyer, Alex Craner, Mark Atwood. You, the people, contributing to this show and making it what it is. And of course, our wonderful Gemma Cooper. Thank you for the entire team for making this show what it is each and every day. I wish you all nothing but a wonderful Wednesday. Keep an eye out for the lies and take good care of each other. See you tomorrow.